Ladies and gentlemen,
this is Gamertag Radio.
All right, so welcome back to Gamertag Radio. Brie, crazy week, Summer Game Fest.
Oh my gosh.
Lots of announcements,
so
lots of appointments.
On.
And a couple other surprises, too. Stay tuned for that. This is your host, Danny Pena. Also, we have Rihanna Manuel Pena. What's up, Ree?
Hello out there. I am staying hydrated, anticipating lots and lots of excitement this week, and trying to remember to eat. That's the biggest one, honestly.
Yes, yes. Oh, by the way, we have a special guest. So we have Sean Kittleson. He's the SVP of Paramount Games. This is something very, very new. We haven't heard this before. And I would love to learn more about what you guys have planned for the studio and also for during Summer Game Fest in the future, too. So, Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here with you.
So tell us a little bit about this new Paramount Game Studios now that you guys have been, working behind the scenes.
So we had, obviously there was a big merger last year between Paramount and Skydance. And prior to the merger, Skydance had internal game development, two teams, Skydance Interactive, the award-winning team behind Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners for VR. And then Skydance New Media, which was co-founded by Amy Hennig, working on Marvel 1943. And over on the Paramount side, there was just a lot of licensing for games, right? Paramount didn't publish games, didn't develop games, but they have all these awesome, awesome IP like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Star Trek, SpongeBob. And when we brought the companies together, we said, well, we've already got in-house game development as part of Skydance. We have all these amazing franchises. Games we feel like should not just be something that's licensed out and you just think of it as like, oh, well, you know, we'll let someone else do all the fun stuff with Turtles, or we'll let someone else do all the fun stuff with SpongeBob. But we won't make it ourselves. Instead, we came in thinking like, why don't we build a game publisher inside of a giant entertainment company? And why don't we see if we can do better at producing Turtles games and Star Trek games and all of that than just licensing it out and giving away a lot more of the control and the quality. So we built a publishing label that we're announcing this week for Paramount Game Studio. And on top of underneath that umbrella, we have the internal teams from Skydance, so Skydance Interactive, Skydance New Media, all the Skydance game stuff. We've got co-development with some really exciting partners. And then we've got, still got licensing, but we're doing it much more focused than before, because now that we are building our own slate of games, we don't want to be competing with ourselves. So we're being much more thoughtful and intentional about how we're licensing out and what we're licensing out, rather than saying, well, maybe this is something we want to make, we want to publish.
Ree?
Yeah, there's sirens going on around us. Forgive any background noise. But Sean, I really want to get into the weeds, right off the bat, because—
Dig in.
Something that people are really excited about is how lore-driven a lot of these titles can be. We've seen some at-bats for things like Turtles. Obviously, there's many that are beloved, and maybe a couple of misses in some of the IP history that you're dealing with. So knowing the level of care that's being put into games like Avatar Legends, the fighting game, to the point where only some characters can redirect lightning, others can't. There's reasons for that. Like going really, really deep into how the actual IP can play out in a video game. How do you, somebody whose self-professed favorite thing to hear is when people are grateful for the lore nerds behind the wheel, how do you maintain that across so many different beloved IPs?
That's a fun one. There's two big pieces to that. One is the people making the games have to be fans, right? We want our games to be by fans for fans. So to me, a team that comes in pitching us a game, if they're not coming in with, you can't fake it, right? You can't fake authentic fandom. You can't fake the desire to spend years of your life committing all of your creative energy to build a game. So we want those people who are clearly so passionate and so driven by the thing that they love that they're willing to go that extra mile and put that attention to detail and put that love and care, because they know that if they were not making the game but playing the game, that's what they would want, right? This is the whole, when people talk about AI in games and stuff, it's like, well, you know what AI can't do? AI can't tell you what it feels like to collect action figures and comic books. AI can't tell you what it's like to play a game for dozens of hours and invent more lore in your head because you're filling in gaps in between cinematics and lines of dialogue. So we need the people who can bring that real human heart and soul to why they love something. And then internally, we have a team on the franchise side. We have dedicated franchise teams who are lore masters and primary source experts on all things, and that are connected to, for example, Avatar Studios, that are connected to each franchise to make sure that we're able to, again, bring the best resources to the fans who are making the games, so that we're not just saying like, yeah, go Wikipedia and figure things out. Like, it's much more important that we have service in mind when someone is working with us, that we're going to collaborate with them and guide them. And then we've got an editorial group in addition to that, that's just minding the games from a qualitative perspective as well. So there's a lot of people involved, but everyone has the same goal of let's make the best possible game. And let's hope it stands up to that scrutiny of, well, like I think Azula should be able to redirect lightning, but I don't know if Sokka can do that, right? Like that's, I think, a great example that you've done a deep pull of your own. But the people at Gameplay Group are so passionate about Avatar, like, you don't have to tell them twice. Like, a lot of times they're looking for it or they already have it in mind. And that's a great example of a game that was previously a licensed title that we saw how much love was going into it, and we felt like it needed that much love being pushed out to get it to the most fans in the marketplace. And that's why we said, hey, we'd like to publish this one too.
Yeah, that's great. Because awesome. We actually talked to the team back in February, and we were just talking about, you know, Avatar Legends. And you could tell the passion, like, with them being fans of the franchise and everything. So is it mostly studios will come up to you guys to pitch, or is it a mix of both where you will go out there and find a studio that makes sense to make that type of game once you sit down and plan it out?
It's a mix, right? There are studios that come to us pitching. I think we're super choosy about who we want to work with, because you have to make sure that you've got the right team for the right game, and they have to be able to demonstrate either with software that they've made or with games they've already released that they're going to pull it off, and you're not taking a huge risk by committing something precious to them that they might not be able to fulfill. And then sometimes there are teams that we're reaching out to say, listen, we're big fans of yours. This is the other thing. Everyone working on a team has to still be a gamer and a fan of games. Otherwise, I just don't think you could do your job as well. It's really easy. I understand. I've been in this business almost 20 years. It's really easy after a while to be like, I've played enough games. I don't need more games. Or like, oh, I'm getting older. I don't have as much time in my life. Look, I still spent all weekend playing games because I need to know what I think is good, and I need to know who's making great stuff that I want to work with them. And now it's become a thing of, if I'm playing something amazing, I want to go find that team and talk to them. And that's how you get teams like Bloober. That's how you get teams like Platinum Games, is this combination of, hey, we're fans of yours. Are you a fan of something we've got? And when they say yes, that's when there's magic.
Let me tell you this. You mentioned those studios. You know, those are like, I have a couple top studios that I love their games, right? Planet Games is one of them. Bloober is one of them too. So I was very, very excited to see that you guys have been working on some surprises, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. But it's really cool to see that, man. Like, I feel like they, with the games that they're working on, they are like the right studio for that IP.
Yes.
And I'm glad that you guys are very picky about that too. So I'm glad you guys made the right choice.
Yeah, we don't want a combo that you have to kind of squint at to be like, oh, I don't know about that. It should be more like when you hear what they're working on, you're like, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Let's talk about that. Let's go first. First thing first, let's talk about what Planet Games been working on with you guys now for a while.
Yeah. So I'm wearing the t-shirt. I've also got my hat on.
Jealous.
I'm all merched out. But we've been working with Platinum Games on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin.
Oof.
And that is I've had some bucket list games in my career, and this is another one. This is going to be the best possible AAA action adventure adaptation of The Last Ronin that we can make it. And when to give you like bring it back to their pitch, like when Platinum pitched us, they pitched us with so much passion and authenticity and a deep understanding of the lore and the characters and the themes. And you're also talking to the creative team through translation. So it's always tricky when you're working in multiple languages to see how that passion, that authenticity is going to come through. And it was so genuine, so real. I remember kind of at the end of the first meeting being like, you got me. Like, I didn't expect it, but you understand that The Last Ronin is about more than badass, mature Ninja Turtle action. Like, you understand that The Last Ronin is a story of grief and memory and legacy and about the way that we all change as we go through life and how we were all Turtles fans as kids, but we've grown up in a much more complicated world and we've seen things that we can't unsee. And some of us have kids and we're looking at the next generation and thinking about what kind of world we're going to fight for them. And all of that was in Platinum's pitch. Like, they came with the, hey, this is going to be a Platinum game. This is going to have Platinum action. This is going to be badass and over the top. But they also came with, but we want the storytelling to be on another level. We want to push these themes and we want to embrace what made this such a special comic and such a special story for Turtles fans. So that's the best, like you're saying, like that combination was so natural and such a perfect fit. And it's to me, Last Ronin represents everything that we want Paramount Games to be. It's the best possible example of like the peak of like really high-end production values, really amazing team, legendary team, and bringing the IP to life with the best possible circumstances that we can give it.
And you talk a lot about the fit between the type of game that everyone's envisioning and the original source material. Talk a little bit more about Bloober doing Star Trek, because yeah, that's one that I didn't give it a squint. Maybe a slight depreciation of my eye level,
sure.
Right? Like, I'm just like, huh, okay. Because space is scary. There's some people that we know who yeah, are terrified of it and think it's the worst thing ever to go into space. But why Bloober? How does that take work out?
So Bloober, there's a ton of Star Trek fans. They've obviously got a lot of love for the lore, particularly the Next Generation era. And they had a take on Ro Laren, played by Michelle Forbes, who was like a fan favorite character in the original series for Next Generation. And like, Ro isn't necessarily the first person you think of with Next Generation. When you talk to the fans, you go to those deep cuts, they're like, yeah, we never saw enough Ro Laren. It's like, all right, we can give you some more. But what I think really sets Bloober apart is you can look at them and say, this is a studio that does horror really well. This is a studio that does third-person survival horror really well. But if you pick the pieces of it out, it's like, well, what they actually do is third-person action in a survival situation very, very well with high-end production values. The production that they brought to Silent Hill 2, a production that they brought to Chronos the New Dawn, you can just tell like, wow, this team is hitting on a really high level right now. Like, they're in their prime in terms of their capability and what they can put out there. And I think that Star Trek Shadow Frontier represents for them the next step in that direction, where they show that they can do a lot more than the jump scares and the gore and all the things that I love about survival horror, but they can also just make a straight up psychological thriller in a sci-fi universe that kind of hits on a different level than the games that they've made in the past, because there's something that Trek has that you don't necessarily get with a straight up horror game, which Trek has the values of the Federation. Trek has the values of to boldly going and what that means to be a part of that. So I think that with Shadow Frontier, you're going to get all the best things that Bloober can do, married with all of the things that really that set Star Trek apart in science fiction. And that combination is going to be, to me, something that proves that this is a team that has way more range than people have realized before. And I'm super excited to show more of it off.
Yeah, I'm very, very curious about that because I'm a huge fan of their horror games and everything. So, but I want to go back to Ninja Turtles because you know there's probably people that have never.
We
heard
can go
of
back
them.
And forth. We can go.
Yeah,
all
we'll
over
go
the
back
place.
And forth. We'll take. We'll
I'm
take
flexible.
Turns. No, but this people out there, they probably never heard of The Last Ronin, right?
Yeah.
For those that hearing this for the first time, they probably know about Ninja Turtles, but they don't know about The Last Ronin. What do you could tell us about that?
So, without spoiling it for anyone. Because I do think you should run out and buy the IDW graphic novel collections.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
It's one of the best-selling graphic novels of the last several years for a reason. I think Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz did an amazing job taking the story of the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and bringing it into an alternate future, an alternate present, really, for us. But what would happen if all but one of the turtles were dead, and it was down to the last turtle to find justice for all of his fallen brothers. I won't even say who that turtle is. And I know there's probably gonna be people in the comments like, oh, I'll spoil it for you. Yeah. But like, I think part of the fun is going in and not necessarily knowing which turtle. Mm-hmm. But it's about that turtle coming back to New York after many, many years away. And having to face off with Hiroto Saki, the grandson of Shredder, and a Foot Clan that has emerged to literally take over New York. So this is a what if the bad guys won scenario where the Foot have taken over New York. They basically walled it off like an escape from New York situation. And it's up to the last surviving Ninja Turtle to come back and try to free New York and fight tyranny. It's an amazing story. Like I said, Kevin Eastman, one of the co-creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like came back to work on this with author Tom Waltz. Peter Laird also contributed art and work to this story. This was something that the Turtles creators had like 30 years ago and they were working on the original books. So it's got so much love and reverence for the past and what came before and that sort of that core Ninja Turtles that so many people remember from their childhood, but it brings it into a gritty and more mature situation where you're dealing with pretty heavy subjects and a lot of really intense over-the-top action.
So is this more like a... Cause you know you played the old school Ninja Turtle games. Is it gonna be like more like a beat 'em up or Bayonetta platinum game style, or is it gonna be something very different that we haven't seen before?
This is going to be, I think, it's gonna be a platinum game. But one of the things that Platinum really wanted was they wanted to take like platinum style gameplay and meld it with Western-style action-adventure storytelling. So I'm actually working on the story with the team. This is the first time that I've worked on story for a game all up.
What's that?
Since Mortal Kombat 11. So it's been a while. I've been working on other things, but this was one that brought me back in, and I'm working with a lot of great people on this. Mike Rogers is the narrative director that we brought in to work on this, because when we first started the project, we had all these conversations with Yohei Shimbori. And Shimbori-san, he's the director at Platinum who's working on the game. He comes from a lot of great work in fighting games. He was on Tekken 8, the Dead or Alive series for a number of years. And Shimbori-san was pitching me on how they wanted to tell the story. And I started pitching some ideas back and talking about, well, we'll get, if you want Western storytelling, we'll get some Western talent to come in. He's like, well, I was thinking you could work on story with me. I'm like, yeah, don't tempt me with a good time. I'm in. So working on it, like it's a passion project for all of us, but I think that's maybe the biggest difference is you're going to see a story that we talk a lot about games like God of War and Ghost of Tsushima and Ghost of Yotei, and really challenging both the conventions of what a Western action game looks like and what a Platinum action game looks like. And I think it's going to be a very unique combination of the two.
Yeah, before we ask this question, we haven't seen the trailer yet because we haven't been somewhere. Game Fest has been a couple of days before that. But man, I know the crowd is going to go nuts. They're going to go nuts. That's for sure. All right, go ahead, Ree.
Yeah, this might be a bit of a softball or a bit of a touchy-feely question. But when we're talking about...
I'll cry for you. You can borrow Walter's name.
Well, truly, like when we're talking about IP and storytelling and narrative and all of these, right? Like Star Trek, Avatar... Ninja Turtles and others, right, to come, I'm sure. They all have such passionate fan bases because these are universal experiences that we're identifying with, right?
Yeah.
What is your and Paramount's philosophy in making that, like, the through line? Because I can hear it from you. But how do you distribute that amongst such a large group of people making a game? How do you make sure it all gets all the way down to the community, all the way down to the people hitting go on the go live button? Like, how do you maintain that level of passion when, let's face it, like, there's just so many people trying to get everybody on the same page must be really tough, and you're wrangling two different orgs coming together with such huge, beloved responsibility.
Yeah. Wow, there's a lot of pieces there that I could tug at. I think that one thing that helps is that I'm in a leadership position in the company, so
that makes it a little easier. Yeah,
that helps. I think I have found, so my formative experiences in my career actually started at DC Comics and like working on the Arkham franchise is where I began my career. And I always approached working with those characters like Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman with the respect and the belief that it was not brand management or franchise development. It was cultural stewardship. Like these characters that are so beloved, like you said, and we're talking about something like Ninja Turtles, we're talking about something that you find as a child and that grows up with you in so many ways, and it lives in a special place in your heart to where you hear certain things. You hear someone say cowabunga and you're like, yeah, it's pizza time. I'm ready. No anchovies. But like you when you work on these things, you have to take that responsibility if you don't want to ruin it for the next generation. Like you want to be able to pass that along to the next wave. And that's what cultural stewardship means. So having that as a core pillar of our business is something that I'm really lucky to be here and be in the position that I'm in, where I'm the head of creative and production for this games division, to be able to say, we care about this. We care about cultural stewardship. We care about authenticity. And fortunately, I don't have to fight to make that a reality, because all the way up to the very top of the company, I'm working with David Ellison back at Skydance and now here at Paramount, he's always said, quality is our brand. Like we win by making the best possible thing. Like we win by loving this stuff so much and caring about it and putting that passion into it. And I believe that everyone that I work with, it kind of catches on when you've got so much enthusiasm for it. So everyone on the games team understands how important this is, but I'm at least trying to role model it myself to say, like, I love this so much. I'm putting my nights and weekends into working on this, into working on Last Ronin instead of just hiring all the work away. Although my wife probably wishes that I had. My son is cool with it. My son is like, go away, Dad, and come back when you've got something cool though, so I can be proud of you. Maybe I'll love you more. No, he loves me. But it's something that I think it's kind of infectious when you care so much and where you believe that the fans that are going to receive these things, so the people make the thing need to love it as much as anyone who would play it. Like you're making a game for yourself, but like you said, really, like the values are so universal. So if you are working on something and you feel something, the odds are that someone else out there is going to feel it. If you're just working on it and you're kind of passing it through with the rubber stamp, like, yeah, that's good enough. Yeah, that's fine. Like, that good enough is not good enough for me. Good enough is when you feel it. And like, I am not, and as an example, using myself, I'm not the best artist. I'm not a great musician. I've got the worst rhythm. I'm real funny to watch dance because I'm just a little to the left or right of the beat. I'm never quite on it. And there's so many things that I'm not good at, but I know when I feel something. And so I navigate my creative work by feel. And when we see a trailer, and like the trailer that we're launching for Last Ronin, like there was a feeling that I wanted to have when I watched it from the first discussions we had about it. And until we got to the point where I remember screening the final cut with my son and just feeling like, and my son looking at me and going, that's the one. You should put that song on Spotify because I wanna loop it. I'm like, yeah, all right, we got it. We got it.
Okay, he wants to loop the song.
We're
okay.
In. Yeah, nice. So be ready for the needle drop. Like, music goes hard.
Oh, wait, this is original RZA music?
It's
or like,
since the trailer will already be out by the time this
is there. Yeah, so, it's coming out so Saturday.
It is, I'll spoil a little bit for you two since you haven't seen it yet. But it is a new rendition of the classic theme.
Okay.
It comes in, and when it hits, it's going to hit in a way that you'll be like, you'll feel it too.
Oh,
you'll be pounding your chest. That's
goosebumps,
what it's about.
Goosebumps.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. Now, I was going to, you know, and I know it is important to focus a lot on the fans, right? But
yeah,
I feel also there's going to be a whole new audience because that is important too, to get in that whole new audience that never got to read the comics of, you know, or watch the cartoons of Ninja Turtles or read the books or seen the movies of Star Trek, right? Or Avatar, they probably never even seen the series, right? So
yeah,
Travis,
but how about them? How can you mix when you work on a project like that, to mix both for the hardcore fans but also for the new people that it's going to be their first time experiences? Like, how do you blend that both, you know?
Well, a lot of that comes from the accessibility of the game itself and making sure that, you know, your on-ramp in the gameplay is something that everyone can come in and sort of like test the waters a little bit before they're really getting the heavy challenges thrown at them. But from a storytelling perspective, it's always about keeping the mindset. And one of the benefits of working, for example, with Platinum on The Last Ronin is they're aware that in Asia, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has not had as mass an audience as we have in North America and Europe. So to find that global audience, we've got folks on the Platinum side who are able to check us and say, wait a minute. Like, the audience over here isn't gonna know that reference as well. So we're putting in a lot of, in all of the games, we're sort of giving it this test of, does it pass the newbie test? Does it pass the, I'm new to Star Trek, but I'm not new to Bloober games. Is this going to convert me? And that's a really, really difficult level to hit because you want to make it authentic for the fans, but it's those universal emotions. Those things carry. So as long as someone understands where a character's coming from and there's clarity in their goals and what's at stake and the urgency they need to get there, as long as you're vibing and you are rooting for them to get to that place, then emotionally you can go on that journey with them. That was always a really important thing for me in my writing projects, and it's something that I think we take to all of the games now. So that's why with Avatar, for example, we just want all of the characters to fight with the most flair that they can and their own personality coming through and their style. And then you might fall for a character even if you've never seen the series before. Although, if you have not watched Avatar The Last Airbender or Legend of Korra, get out there. It's, some of the best stuff you could possibly, some of the best, I think, like, action storytelling there's ever been. Some of the best character work and development there's ever been. But all of these things do have to stand up to that test of, what if this is a fan's first time? And that's a part of why we want to make games an entire division at Paramount is that fandom can start with games. Games used to be, when you were at a big entertainment company, games used to be like the bottom of the barrel, the back of the flywheel. And now we believe that the next great franchise can start in games, right? So there might be people who never read The Last Ronin comics, mm-hmm. who maybe didn't have as big an affinity for TMNT growing up. But if they play The Last Ronin and come away feeling like they are now a fan of these characters, and they want to see more of this world, then we've done our job. Like we want to send the game out and gain more fans that weren't there. If it's for fans only, that's always a bummer, because then sometimes you get that thing of, you might love something, you can try to tell someone else, they'll love it, and they're mm-hmm. just like, nah, this is like way too much inside baseball. I will never appreciate that. Good for you, but not for me. We want things that you can bring people into and say, this is so good, you have to try it. And look at all these reviews that say, I wasn't a fan of Star Trek, but I played Star Trek Shadow Frontier, and they got me. And now I'm going to go watch First Contact, and that's the goal.
Yeah, my last question is, these games, I know it's been announced and everything, but when is the right time to release all these? Because there's so many. I know Avatar's the first one that's coming out now in July.
Yep.
But what about the other two? Is that like for this year? That's for next year? And platforms?
We have a roadmap. Yeah, we have a roadmap that goes out years. So, these aren't the only projects we have. So,
I mean, you can talk about it here. Feel free, you know?
Man, I could
drop some gems.
And then you would just see like the screen like blip out, and when it came back, there'd be no one in the chair because I would just be vaporized. But no, we've got a lot of ambitions for all of the cool IP that we have, and we've got some really amazing partners that we're working with to bring that to life. So the biggest thing is making sure that we give each game the time that it needs to cook, right? Like a game like Avatar Legends, the fighting game, is ready, has been ready to go out the door. So that's an easy one to say, yeah, we can launch that right away. Uh-huh. All the other games, we're not talking as much about release dates yet, only because we want to make sure that we give them the time to cook. Like you can't, one of the things that Dan Brigg, who's the head of games over here, has often said when he and I were first working together, was you can't bake a cake faster by turning up the heat in the oven. You'll just burn it. Mm-hmm. And that's games. Games take time. You got to let the team cook. And when it's ready, you'll know. You can stick the fork in it and come out and it's squeaky clean. And that's what constitutes the ultimate finish line for us. If we just push something out there to push it out there, great. Now we've prevented ourselves from building the next awesome franchise.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and that's the right way to do things. You know, don't rush it. Take your time. Make it a masterpiece.
And be realistic. I'm always. It's funny. Yep. I feel like I'm the person. It's part of having the job that I have that I'm usually the person saying, "Team's going to need more time."
Yeah.
Team's going to need a little more money, and people are saying, "But the team is saying they only need this much time." I'm like, "That's because they're afraid to tell you what they really need." but we need a little more time. So better to have that.
Wait, there's no talks about platforms or anything like that yet, right?
PC and console.
Okay, well, that's good enough. All right, Ree, you gonna say something?
I was just gonna say, take all the time you need. These things, as you say, they need to cook and it needs to come out right. So we will wait patiently with our forks and our ice cream, and hopefully it's not melted by the time we get our hands on them.
Definitely,
the ice cream might not last, but it's gonna be a hot summer in LA. So definitely not here. But yeah.
Well, Sean, I just want to say first of all, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to talk to you. I can't wait to see more information about the games. I'm very excited about all the projects, and congrats to you and the team. I think this is like the right time for all these announcements and get us excited, man. Again, you know. So this is awesome.
Well, I hope you get goosebumps with the needle drop and the Ronin trailer. Ooh. And I can't wait to share more with you.
Awesome. All right, thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
All right.